Coming up on this week's episode of Check Your Balances, can studying the length of Broadway runs impact your investing? Stick around. We're going to talk about that next.
Check Your Balances is a show produced and owned by Kraftwerk Capital. The views expressed by the hosts and their guests are personal opinions and should not be considered personal financial advice or the opinion of Kraftwerk Capital. All investments have risk and may lose money. Consult with your financial advisor, tax preparer, or attorney prior to implementing anything discussed, and please do not use this show as the sole basis for financial decisions.
Welcome back to another week of Check Your Balances. I am Ross Anderson, joined as always by my friend and co-host, who's in the void of daylight, as usual, Dan Maseka. Good to see you, my friend.
Good to see you. What's going on?
Oh, another day in paradise, Dan. We're in that season where like you get warm days and like icy cold days, like back to back in the DC metro region. I don't know. I have no idea how to dress. I don't leave the house until, you know, like late in the day most days, just because there's nowhere to go because we work from here. And so I'm very confused by this weather. It's gone from 67 to like 30 degrees day to day.
Yeah, yesterday was beautiful, and today I went out with a light jacket. It is February still, at least as of the recording of this podcast, and I was freezing, like desperately uncomfortable just a few minutes into my journey outside.
That's it. Yeah, we're into the seesaw season, so I think the weather's going to do this until it gets steamy and hot in the summer, and then we'll start the cycle all over again. So that's what DC life is like.
That's right. We get all the seasons in one season.
Exactly. By the way, Dan, I think this is actually pointed at me because I was the one that said I am a Dave Matthews fan. We had a comment on our YouTube video last week suggesting that if we're Dave Matthews fans, that we're also Nickelback fans. Now, that feels very unfair to put a formulaic Canadian rock band in with a very jam bandy, incredible musician group and say, even if you dislike both of those bands, the level of disrespect that I implied from that comment was pretty aggressive. I feel like Nickelback gets a lot of smoke for being not a good band and a very, very generic thing, where that doesn't feel like the Dave Matthews thing to me.
Dave Matthews, the opposite of generic, I would say. Nickelback and Dave Matthews don't go on the same chart for me. Dave Matthews, at least, is on my great artists that I don't like chart. Nickelback would just be on, would not be anywhere near the list of great artists at all.
No, I mean, yeah, commercial success, but not great artists, perhaps great individual musicians, but certainly not something that they prove with their work. So as a musician, that cut a little deep, actually. I was kind of like, oh, that's a spicy comment. So, you know, if you hate our taste in music, that's fine. We can take it either way. That's if you're checking us out on YouTube.
So funnily enough, I feel like that has a lot of tie-ins with our topic today. I don't know if your mind went to this, but today we're talking about the Lindy effect. Do you want to give a brief overview on what the Lindy effect is?
Sure. Yeah. So I actually read two different origins for this. I was trying to kind of identify the original origin. Essentially, there were two different things that I heard or read. One was about comedians basically way back in the day, this is like early 60s, that somebody asserted that comedians have a finite body of work and that you've only got so much material. And so for somebody to go on stage or like on television every week, your career is going to be about 6 weeks long because you're going to run out of funny things to say and that your creativity will not regenerate. That struck me as ridiculous because I think so many of the comedians I respect and really enjoy are great writers and they continue to generate good content. The more established version of this was actually in the measurement of Broadway shows.
Hmm.
And there was a theory that the longer a show had been running, the longer it was likely to run. And so this is kind of counter to our general instincts about lifetime. Right? We as humans, things that are perishable, they have a finite life. If our life expectancy is, 80-ish years, somebody that's midway through that, we expect them to be middle-aged and right? Like that is generally how we think about our lifespan. Is somebody that is older is not likely to live way longer than somebody that's younger. The Lindy effect is the opposite. So for things that are ideas, for things that are technologies, things that are concepts, the longer they have been around and been relevant, the longer they are likely to be relevant. And so, yeah, this came up with Broadway shows, and I think the experiment was done in 1993 of, are the shows that are likely to last the longest the ones that have already been around? And that was true. It was like 95% true. So that is the Lindy effect, and that can be expanded to a bunch of different concepts, but it's basically the longer something has been relevant, the longer something is likely to be relevant.
So thinking of music, I'm a big Beatles fan. My mind went to the Beatles and the British Invasion era, right? They led off a massive influx of music from Britain into the US and around the world. The Beatles came to popularity 60 years ago. And the likelihood that people will still be talking of the Beatles in 60 years is very high, right? I would wager that they're going to be a permanent fixture in the story of music forever. All these other bands that came around at the same time and were very hyped because it was a hot commodity to market this wave of music have fallen by the wayside and are not likely to ever find a resurgence, right? That's what I think about. Like, the Beatles have reached the critical mass of they're just always going to be around. And that's the Lindy effect in action. Like, the longer they've been a story, the longer they're expected to be a story for the rest of time, basically.
Yeah, and I don't know that it suggests perpetuity, but yes, every additional year that the Beatles remain relevant extends their hypothetical and likely relevancy. And so, yes, that could extend completely into perpetuity. We could one day talk about the Beatles the same way we talk about Mozart, right? That's weird, for right, sure. To think about that. But yeah, you could easily put them in that category where it's taught as, you know, classical music or whatever we end up calling music of that era and how it's taught many, many, many years into the future. But yeah, every additional year that they have been around has made them more relevant. And I think we're not talking about this just because we like talking about music. There's an investing concept here, right? And you've seen the sale of these catalogs of music. You've seen sales of Michael Jackson's music and the Beatles' music and just these really, really iconic bands that have said, we're going to sell the royalty rights, which on one hand seems silly. Like, if you're going to go buy the Rolling Stones royalty rights, that's probably not an increasing commodity. But the fact that it's been relevant for so long is an indicator of how long it's likely to be relevant. And so you're seeing people invest on that very basis.
Right, absolutely. And in art, it's easy to see because we still speak of books that have come out 50, 100, hundreds of years ago. If we think about things like the Odyssey and Iliad, right? We're likely to be speaking about those in decades to come. Whereas the most recent book off the publisher's press, we might not know in a couple of years from now or ever for that matter. But there is a really meaningful investment thesis here too, especially as we're looking at the world of individual stocks and companies.
Yeah, and so this came to our eye, and we actually invited them on the show. We actually don't know who writes this column. There's a Substack that we've referenced a couple times, and we are trying not to just use them as a feeder system for what me and Dan are thinking about, but they write really good work. I would encourage anybody certainly to subscribe to the free version, if not subscribe to their paid version of this, because I do think it's good. But it's a Substack called Market Sentiment. We'll link it in the show notes. And so they basically unpacked this from an investing perspective and said, does it hold true that if we invest in companies that have been around longer, that are likely to have this incredible future because they've existed for so long? And so we can think about, you know, any company that you can name, General Electric being founded in 1892, right? Or the Coca-Cola company, right? So there's, and I'm not picking those stocks, that those were just the two names that jumped to my eye off of this list. But is that longevity relevant to us as investors?
Yeah. And I think if we were to take the Lindy effect in action, one conclusion you could draw is at a minimum, you're at lower risk of those companies falling into oblivion. It could still happen, but they're less likely to go under if you're picking a company that's been around for 50 or even 100 years versus one of the hottest new trends that's making money off of something that might not be relevant, whether that be a product, service, or technology a decade from now.
So the reason I really wanted to talk about this is I see this a lot with individual clients. I see people asking questions that kind of go down this path. I see advertising that goes down this path of what's next, right? There's a lot of people looking for the next thing, whether it's the next hype cycle, whether it's the next company, something that is going to have really incredible growth rates. And the Lindy effect kind of flies in the face of that. And it could be easy to look at that data and say, well, yeah, maybe they're going to be around longer, or maybe they've got the longevity, but does that make it a good investment? Because there's plenty of companies that have been around for a long time that maybe aren't that exciting to invest in. But I think I see people make the opposite mistake more often than not, where I think we have a tendency to ignore the obvious idea, right? We have a tendency to say, well, yeah, that's been done. That's great. That's a big company. But what's going to be the next big company? And I don't know that you have to find that. I don't know that successful investing requires us to be on the bleeding edge of every single technology. In fact, I would argue it almost specifically doesn't. And that doesn't mean that couldn't or shouldn't be part of your portfolio. I'm not suggesting you don't invest in innovation or new businesses, new concepts, new ways to solve a problem. But the Lindy effect is in direct conflict of that, that basically young companies, young ideas, young solutions are less likely to be around for a long time. There is a survival of the fittest going on actively in the markets that we invest in the world that we live in. And by definition, the businesses that are there have been winners and are likely to continue being winners.
Right. And there are a lot of structural reasons for that too. If you've been around for a long time, you have strong infrastructure, presumably strong cash flows that will allow you to continue moving forward without the same risks of a new company and a new industry. In this article, one thing I like that they talk about is an interview with Jeff Bezos, who mentions when he was talking about what made his company so successful, that a lot of people ask him what's going to change in the next 10 years. And he flips that question around to saying a lot of people don't ask him what won't change in the next 10 years, which is really where a lot of the opportunity is going to fall. Like, there are a lot of things that are being done and will continue to be done into the future because they're a necessity versus potentially a luxury.
Which is the exact premise of Morgan Housel's most recent book, right? So yeah, that is a, I think he uses that exact same quote, and that's a wonderful quote. If you're thinking about your portfolio, the two investors that I'm gonna comment on here, because I think I know our audience fairly well and how many of you found us, I think you've got to think about, are you trying to invest like Warren Buffett, or are you trying to invest like David Gardner? Because I think of those two people both as really successful investors. And I don't know that I can put David Gardner on the same pedestal that we can put Warren Buffett on, perhaps partially just because of the Lindy effect.
Sure.
Perhaps because of how long Buffett's been doing it, that his relevance is by definition longer and more historically relevant than David Gardner. But I have a ton of respect for David Gardner. I don't mean that as a slight, but David Gardner is I would almost call him a futurist, right? Like, he tends to think really, really innovatively about what's next and has a stomach for new technology that is pretty incredible. And that gives him kind of this incredible slugging percentage where he hits a lot of home runs, but he also strikes out a lot, right? He picks a lot of companies and has historically picked a lot of companies. And there's a lot of inside baseball here. So if you don't know who I'm talking about, please forgive me.
And a literal baseball analogy.
Yeah. I'm all over the place, but I think most of our listeners will follow that's really the difference that we're talking about. And Dan, it's kind of like, as you think about a portfolio, would you rather it be time tested and weathered and incredibly resilient, or incredibly fast and exciting?
Yeah. And it doesn't mean that you won't get a good outcome with one, the other, or both of them, right? It's just a matter of how that's going to look. So on one account, the easiest way to go forward is by not going backwards. And if we want to take Lindy effect lessons, right, the more time tested the companies in your portfolio, the less likely you are to experience any sort of shocking performance. Whereas with David Gardner, who by all accounts has achieved tremendous results, has done so in a very jarring way. Like, I'm sure himself, you and me, our portfolio of David Gardner like stocks were very painful in 2022. It was not a fun year to own a lot of those companies, but it doesn't mean that in that basket, there isn't the next biggest company in the world. In fact, I would argue that there probably is. You just need to be able to weather that storm and make sure that it's in line with what you're hoping to do with your portfolio and willing to stick with it.
Yeah, because if investing was just about finding the next thing, we could just look at the recent IPO lists and probably just pull recent IPOs and you know, some of those are going to be janky companies that don't do something that excites us. And some of them are probably, who knows, they could be incredible businesses in the future, but the likelihood is that they're not. That's what the Lindy effect is basically saying, is the more recent your IPO is, the less likely you're going to be that incredible, you know, bellwether company that's going to be the hallmark or crown jewel of your portfolio for decades to come.
We've actually touched on this a couple times on the podcast. There was a SPAC revolution a few years ago of new companies merging with these basically blank check publicly listed companies.
That guy.
And look at where they all are today. I think it was just a few episodes ago, we looked at just a recap of that SPAC wave from, I think it was also 2020, 2021, and how they fared. And I'm not sure there are a very great many winners in that bunch, whereas almost anything else you pick that's been around for a minute has done at least reasonably well in that time.
Yeah. So the article, and again, we're going to link it, but they did a study, and that's, I think, why we really liked this article, because as a concept, I find this interesting. And you could think, yeah, that's an interesting concept, but these are probably slow moving, really boring companies. And in some cases, they are really boring companies and they've still beaten the pants off of the market. So they measured a period of 2000 through 2023, or at least close to the end of 2023, because I think this was published in December. And they had screened down kind of like what the Lindy companies would be, these like long-term existing companies. And over that period, first of all, it crushes the market and the top 10 winners: Sherwin-Williams Company, Moody's, Union Pacific, McKesson, Chubb, Equifax, Norfolk Southern, Eli Lilly, General Dynamics, and Hershey. Now, there's not a single AI name in the bunch, really. Right? I mean, that's a very boring list of companies that smoked the market over a pretty meaningful time period, a 23-year measurement period, where you could have said, yeah, if you're not investing in the tech boom during that window, what are you doing? And it turns out you didn't have to.
You just needed to watch paint dry, apparently.
Literally yeah. Paint dry.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's so easy to get pitched a new idea. Like that's really my reflection from this, is like, we crave a new idea. I really think we do. Those of us that think about investing, adding money to, and again, I hate, we try not to ever talk or pick specific names, but like, if you're adding money to your Berkshire position right now, you're not really betting on innovation. You're betting on a process, and that the things that have been around forever are going to continue to be around. You're betting that railroads won't go away, which is probably true. Might not excite anybody, but they're not building a ton of new railroads, and investing in them is likely to be a good solution as long as they continue to be relevant, which it is. It's really interesting watching people wrestle with this and how to incorporate that into their portfolio versus the desire to find that next thing.
And I'm not immune to wanting an exciting next big thing company. Like, I love that stuff, and watching those stories pan out just like anyone else does. Like, you feel like you're missing out if you're on the sideline during these revolutionary technology innovational periods. But, you know, you also need to understand that the risk is higher with those, and you don't need a home run all the time if we're talking personal finance.
Yeah. Would you rather invest in penicillin or gene editing, Dan?
Right. Yeah.
Which one's likely to be around longer?
Right. I mean, we have gene editing has barely started.
Correct.
Right? We've seen some basic application for it, and it's fascinating and I mean, who knows where that can take us. They've done, have we talked about this? Have they done like beer using gene edited strains of yeast or something like that? I think they've done like some basic application there, and now there's some human application too, which is really exciting. But
yeah, I mean, that's like active cutting edge science and technology right now. It's right. Really easy to pitch me stuff like that. And then you're like, yep, nope. Pharma companies that sell the same old forever are pretty much just dominating the market.
I wish I could cite what this was specifically. So clearly it didn't stay with me long enough. But in the earliest days of my sales training, I remember either reading a book or being told a story about this guy who was selling pencils and got like very wealthy selling pencils. And like pencils, such a simple thing, but people need pencils. Like you've got to have pencils in the world for like every school kid out there or desk or, you know, it doesn't need to be fancy to be effective. The same can be said about investing and literally everything in life, I'd imagine.
We've talked about it before in terms of entrepreneurship, right? You don't have to completely reinvent the wheel. The wheel as a technology is doing just fine. It is not likely to go away based on how long it's been with us. That doesn't mean we don't continue to innovate in other areas, but the wheel has had a good run and is likely to continue with a pretty good run.
The Back to the Future DeLorean could literally fly and still had four wheels on it.
So what are the takeaways from this? I think the first one is just to recognize if you have this bias, right? If you're looking at your portfolio and you're looking at a big winner and you're looking at things you've held for years going, where do I put the cash? Sometimes it's just continuing to invest into what's working. Not if it's too big or not, you know, like be smart, right? Don't overload your portfolio and your winners so that it becomes, you know, absolutely no diversification and everything is in that one name. But yeah, to me, a lot of people will ignore the obvious choice for where to put capital because something has done well. This isn't something where you have to only add to your losers or you can't rebuy something that has been a long-term compounder in your portfolio. Those are good things to add money to.
Yeah, agreed. I think the lesson here is don't look at something and say, look, it's already done this well. I should cash in because how much further can it go? It can go much further with the power of time. So let your money compound in quality things. And if you want to play, you know, with some other ideas for fun, like those are great too. But, you know.
Yeah, I think the average person that wants to invest in stocks should build around a base, a solid, stable core, right? And if your core is index funds, which is what it tends to be for me, I tend to think, put the bulk of the money into the most boring thing you can possibly think of that is likely to compound for decades and decades and decades, and then take your ideas around that and build individual names or things that are exciting and keep the position sizing careful, right? To me, that makes sense. So I always think of it as a hub and spoke model or a core and satellite, whatever term you want to use for that. But you don't need to be too fancy with the core of your portfolio. Doesn't mean you can't have exciting things in there, but that's how my brain interprets this is keep the position sizing in a spot where you're not blowing up if the next best thing doesn't work.
Right on. Yep. Good lesson.
What are your thoughts on this? As you look at your portfolio, do you see the Lindy effect taking place? Do you see it as a bias in your investing? We'd love to hear from you. Check your balances at outlook.com is the email address for the show. You can also find us on YouTube, Instagram, you name it. We're everywhere. Dan, what are you laughing at?
It's so childish. I can't even mention it.
What?
I'm not going to say it on a microphone.
Okay.
We'll talk about it later.
All right. We'll cut that out. Thank you everybody for tuning in this week. We will catch you next time.